This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the mess?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, coming to you with Tick from 5,280 feet. And grateful to have you on the podcast as a listener. If you're listening to this on iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube or however you're receiving it, please make sure to hit subscribe so you never miss any Mile High Chiropractic. And of course, if you have not already etched it in stone in your calendar and reserved your seats, join us at Mile High this year, August 20th to 23rd, where you will get to see this week's guest at Mile High 2020. We are grateful to have both on stage this year and right now on the podcast, Dr. Arno Bernier. He is one of my great mentors and inspirations in chiropractic ever since I found chiropractic as a healing art, and has been really part of my family since I know him. So I'm very grateful to have him on this podcast. He's contributed so much to so many lives in chiropractic, both professionally, personally, politically. He's a graduate from Sherman College, and he almost needs no introduction in chiropractic. He's one of the few people that you know by one name, which is Arno. Thank you for joining us on the podcast, Arno.
Danny, you're very welcome. That was a mouthful, huh?
Well, I have a lot of reverence and respect and admiration for all you've contributed. And you set a bar in my life than for many, as a handful of people do. So thank you for joining us today. And first of all, you have, let's help people that may not get know you and maybe do know you, get to know you a little bit better. Tell us a little bit about your introduction into the chiropractic world, and then we'll delve deeper.
Well, first of all, I want to say this, Danny, you have really embodied the example of people stepping up to the plate. What your contribution is so far is amazing, and I really want to acknowledge you and recognize you for that.
Thank you.
That being said, my journey in chiropractic started in 1973, motorcycle crash, which I always say is a motorcycle on purpose because it got me to go to a chiropractor. And that chiropractor spoke truth on the first visit, his truth and truth. And the more I reflect over the years, if it hadn't been for him speaking truth, I don't think I would have ever become a chiropractor. I don't think I would have ever touched thousands of lives in my practice and families, and then thousands of lives of students, DCs, and the public at large over the years. So my gratitude really goes to that man, Jean Belaval, for speaking the truth and his truth on the first visit in a very succinct and powerful way. And that is pretty much an invitation for anyone listening to really do not hold back on your first visit. Speak it from your heart. Speak it the truth about chiropractic and let the chip fall where they may. Trust that when you speak from your heart and you speak the truth, something will happen in the other person, whether it's a conscious understanding or a subliminal understanding, but something will resonate within them and they will go, I don't really know what maybe that is, but I want this. I wonder what this person has to give. So that was my experience in 1973. And as a result of it, I grew a friendship with that man. Throughout our friendship in the early months of our relationship, he really, really dwelled deep into what chiropractic is and what chiropractic is not. He At time, he would say, you know, chiropractic is a Jean-Jacques Cousteau society of the internal environment. We honor and respect and revere the sanctity of the human body, of the human blood. We honor the internal ecology of the human body. So he would talk to me about innate intelligence, about universal intelligence, about life force, about what life is, what healing is, what health truly is, not what we were taught that health is. So it was a remarkable impact on me and transformation for me. And then when I went to Sherman on the first day of school, I think it was Reggie or Tom Gilardi addressed the 90 students that were in the Pioneer class and say, you know, you're entering this institution to become a doctor of chiropractic, which in our profession is very similar to a doctor of biology or a doctor of literature or a doctor of physics. It has nothing to do with a doctor within the medical world. Basically, you have come here to be a teacher of the philosophy and science of life, and then obviously, through the art of adjustment, clear the neurospinal system. So that was really an awakening to realize that my responsibility as a chiropractor, as a doctor of chiropractic, was to share, to contribute, to teach the public about chiropractic. So that was really remarkable. And it set me on a course that was challenging at the beginning, but wonderful. After I graduated, I went through a personal journey that was challenging and difficult. 9 months, total nervous breakdown, total collapse, total agoraphobic, catatonic, nonverbal for 9 months. But as a result of that, I hit bottom and I took a look deep inside as to what was there, different closets that were there. And when I came back out of it, I had a clear vision of my life for the next 10 years, and it manifested perfectly. I started practicing in Yardley, Pennsylvania, practiced there for 20 years, full-time practice of well-being practice, lots of children, babies, family, wellness practice. And then after that, I moved to Colorado. I practiced part-time in Colorado because I was doing a lot of seminars and I had started a six-day intensive training camp that at the time was called Masterpiece Training Camp. So that pretty much is the journey. As you know, I started the Cafe of Life Vitalistic Model of Practice because I felt going around the country visiting chiropractors that you step into an office and it was so generic. It looked like overnight it could be a dentist if you change the sign, or it could be a gynecologist if you change the sign. It has a medical feel to it. So I started this model of practice that was not only the outside of the practice, the framework of the practice being very professional, being very eclectic, but a personal expression of that chiropractor as far as the decor, the lighting, the sound, and so on. But also people that were willing to do the inner work and dwell deep into the philosophy, into communication, into the art of adjusting. So I created that model called the Cafe of Life Vitalistic Model of Practice, serving the exceptional chiropractic experience. That was a tagline. That is a tagline. I felt that that tagline applied to everyone. If people come in to be more connected, they want an exceptional chiropractic experience. If people came in with sciatic pain, thinking that a chiropractor treats sciatic pain, which we don't, you know, the outcome may be positive as a result of beginning to the doubt, but it's not the purpose of the adjustment per se. They still want an exceptional chiropractic experience. So no matter what they came in with, a young child, a baby, an older person, it didn't matter. Serving the exceptional chiropractic experience. That's a tagline. And then I also started MLS seminars in 1983 or 84, I can't remember exactly the year, to really bring the skills of structural osseous adjusting to a very high level, to a professional level, and to infuse the profession with the dedication to be a professional, like a professional musician or a professional athlete or a professional martial artist. It didn't matter. I wanted to bring that to the field because I remember seeing a video from BJ Palmer training you know, chiropractors, future chiropractors, student at Palmer College in toggle recall. And I remember seeing the amazing alignment. Everybody was in alignment. Everybody was in sync. Everybody was in unison. And they were training for toggle recall. And that type of intensity in training was lost when BJ passed away. And I wanted to bring it back. And as you know, it has blossomed throughout the world, not only MLS, but many other seminars that all stemmed from MLS, from senior staff that were part of MLS for a long time. And then they started their own evolution and their own seminar. So that's pretty much bring us to, up to par.
Well, and I have to say, there's a very important lesson that I heard through that, that I'd like to make sure an audience hears, which is at that initial visit, as well as any talk that you give, you never know who you're speaking to, what's going on in their life, what they have ahead of them in their personal, professional life, and what their future contributions. And you have a responsibility of presence with that and to deliver your best and may tomorrow be a better best than today is. Right.
Correct.
So that's vital. And especially, and you may have seen this. I think this speaks to that, which is there's a shift that has happened, unfortunately, I think, in the chiropractic profession. And I think it's there's a shift I'd like to see it go back to, from making sure we're educating the truth, sharing the truth, delivering the greatest level of clinical care that we can give, to making sure we get people in the door and that we get money from them. That vibe has gone through the profession. And I think that focus of making sure we're present and sharing truth is something that's vital to you.
Very much so. As you said, what's interesting in what you said is you say, making sure you're getting paid, but you put that at the very end. And I always said, that's one of the key. So many people put the business aspect, the getting the money up front versus putting people up front, serving them in that moment, in present time consciousness, speaking what is appropriate in that moment. We're not here to brainwash people, to be fanatical, to be dogmatic. We're here to connect with people first, to create a deep rapport and a deep relationship, but based on a truthful communication and interaction about what is truth and true about chiropractic. I think that's really a key. And, you know, I remember at time people coming in, I had many people that came in on a wellness basis, on a regular basis, but from time to time, like every other chiropractor, I had people that came in with severe problems, sometimes in extreme pain. When someone is in extreme pain, it's totally inappropriate to try to teach them anything or share with them anything about chiropractic. Take care of them and tell them, you know, I want to see you tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. And when those people are available, when there is a listening available, then communicate. This is what we have been doing. So there is a degree of humanity that must be kept at all time versus coming in with a script and blasting people with that script to try to enroll them or to arm twist them into receiving care. That to me is not an appropriate vitalistic approach. It's a robotic mechanistic approach.
Yes, and I'd like to see the profession start to lift up again, kind of in a renaissance, the principle, the values, and that people first. When you put people first, the receiving will happen. You know, when you reverse it and put the receiving first, the people are not gonna happen, they're not gonna come. You know, it happens the other way.
It's funny because we are talking about this. And just this morning, before I open up the call with you, I read a post on Facebook from a chiropractor that said, I heard you talk about connecting with people and speaking your truth and being authentic and real in the now moment. And I finally shifted out of my script. And the moment that I did this, a huge weight lifted from my shoulder and a huge stress fell down and washed over me. I was done. And now I felt so relaxed and connected and happy with that person. So there is, you know, there was a big wave for many years of teaching people a script and everything was scripted. And this is not being authentic. This is not being you. This is being a robot. you know, we might as well have artificial intelligence interacting with people on the first visit if that's what we're going to do. So I'm a strong proponent on real, authentic, honest interaction in all aspects of practice, but especially in connecting with people for the first time, because you can hardly ever undo or redo a first impression.
Yes, yes. Now, with that, we were talking about something else before we start recording that I think is very vital in practice, which is presence and the importance of presence in your dialogue, in your communication, and through your hands. Can you share something about the importance of presence in practice?
Obviously, you know, I came out of Sherman with tremendous passion. I mean, tremendous passion, love for this principle. It hasn't left me in 47 years, so it's there. And with that dedication and that passion, obviously you bring that energy in my early days of practice to the table, and I wanted the very best for those people, so I bring that presence. However, by the mid-80s, I encountered a state of being for 3 months that was very heightened. And in that state of being, it became very clear that my presence alone and the fact that my heart was blown completely open, that when people came into my field, they had spontaneous clearings. They had spontaneous, quote, sometimes remission or resolution of the symptom in the instant that I enter the adjusting room with them and start to connect. So during that time, I actually practiced in silence for those 3 months. Very, very, very short, maybe good to see you. You know, my name is Arno on the first visit at the most. But after that, there was no need to talk. I was so in a state of bliss, internal love, that silence was sufficient. That was complete communication. You couldn't add more to what was in the field than my silence in listening to people if they decided to talk. And a lot of time they were not talking because this energy that emanated from me was so all-encompassing, all filling the practice, that actually, you know, this sounds very, very weird, but Bill Bain years ago had spoken about the same thing. People were coming to the office, sit in the waiting room, sometimes wait for 45 minutes to an hour, and sometimes people would just get up, go to the front desk and pay and say, I got my adjustment and reschedule for next week, and they didn't even see them. Just being the field, the energetic field was sufficient for them to felt that a transformation had taken place, that they had been cleared. So from that experience, I felt that the metaphysical part of the adjustment, presence, was absolutely paramount. And I transfer that into the teaching at MLS Adjusting Seminars, where we teach the metaphysical part of the adjustment and the physical part of the adjustment. And now more and more I emphasize that the metaphysical part of the adjustment is a dominant part. Presence, visualization, open-heartedness, totally empty, connected the best you can to your own soul, to your own self, I think is paramount.
Yes, yes. And I think it makes all the difference in the practice member's experience of that adjusting room. I say so frequently that we've been in the same location now for 20 years. It's an incredible field of a lot of lives that have been changed through those tables, you know, that has built, I almost don't want to move because I've built up that field.
So, you know, this is interesting you say this, Danny, because it sounds very fluffy, very esoteric, until people realize that in science now, it is known that you take the seed of a mighty oak. That seed has an energetic field that is so powerful and that contains the mature oak. And I frequently talk about the morphic field of the nucleus of our practice. You are the center. You, Danny, are the center of your practice. I am the center of my practice when I was in practice. And that center is the seed. And then you attract people that connects with your vibration, that connect, that has a resonance with you, with your message, and they start to magnify the power of that seed. And after a while, it organically grows within your practice and reach people. So my absolute validation of this is when I moved to Colorado and I started to practice part-time, and I decided, aside from introducing myself and saying, good to see you, Danny, I will not speak. I will be in silence. And people, no education. At that point, I did zero education. It was in my field. It was in my consciousness, everything that I'd done for the prior 20 years. People started to bring me children, babies, family came in with me not saying a word about, you know, it'd be a good idea for you to bring your kids. It'd be a good idea for you to bring your family. So I had a validation of the power of the morphic field that we create around ourselves from our consciousness, from our vibration.
Yes. Yes. Now thinking about you, your journey, and that you help so many people with the art of chiropractic, you had some incredible mentors. So, and I think you're a bridge between generations of chiropractors right now, of other mentor, your mentors to new chiropractors that will be people's mentors in the future. Can you select one of your mentors that was impactful and something that you learned from them that was of value?
Well, a few things. Most of my mentors were taught by B.J. Palmer. So I had a direct link from B.J. Palmer to those people to me. To single one out will be difficult because Ly W. Sherman was an extremely reserved, introverted person, but his vibration in his being was powerful. He was a former director of the B.J. Palmer Research Clinic in Davenport, Iowa, when B.J. was alive, and obviously Sherman College was named after him. Tom Gilardi was rock solid in the philosophy, absolutely an immovable rock, the rock of Gibraltar when he came to the philosophy. He was another mentor. Reggie was a phenomenal teacher, and a teacher that caused his students to question, to inquire, to probe into what is truth and true about chiropractic philosophy. That was remarkable. A challenging teacher, because at time when you thought, oh, I got this, you would raise your hand and he would just destroy you. I mean, completely just wipe you out for you to like go deeper into looking into things. So he was a mentor. Joe Fleischer was a mentor to some degree. Guy Rickman to some degree, but not to the same degree than Ly W. Sherman and Tom Gilardi. Doug Gates was a phenomenal teacher of philosophy, a deep thinker, inquiring. So I was blessed. And obviously, you know, we would go to Atlanta from time to time at DE. At the time, Dynamic Essential was huge, 4,000 or 5,000 people, 3,000 people. And they had Ziga Fuss, Sid Williams, Tremendous Jones, a lot of the phenomenal chiropractors of the time and visionary of the time. So I was blessed with a whole array of mentors. Then I had other mentors that are not in chiropractic, but that's more personal.
and so, like, for example, what was something you learned about Toggle from, say, Lyle Sherman?
Lightning speed. And, you know, from time to time, there has been video floating of adjusting. And yeah, I was a proponent and I really got it about lightning speed. So in my prime, it was truly lightning speed. And still, even all the years that I taught, when we went to MLS2 and teach Toggle and demonstrate Toggle, lightning speed. Absolutely key, yet set up proper visualization, feeling the articulation, feeling what I call dropping into the lake, where you feel the invitation from the vertebrae, from the joint. And when that connection is there and the arc of drive is absolutely accurate, firing with lightning speed on an automatic system, basically because you have trained so much, is critical.
Now, something that we see in chiropractic right now is so much defining or looking at subluxation, unfortunately, as a joint dysfunction. Sadly, we see that in education, we see that in politics, and really making chiropractic like a physical therapist. I know you and I share a different view than that. How do you see subluxation?
Well, as with everything, we have theories around subluxation. And I always say that the lack of evidence is not evidence of lack. We still have theories about atoms. We have theories about electricity. If you research it and Google it, we still do not know what electricity is. We have theories about it. So subluxation, we have had theories, and the first theories that came out and at the birth of chiropractic and soon after was from the Palmers. When the context of life, when the understanding of life was a mechanistic understanding, so you had to communicate in that language. So subluxation, less than a luxation, at the time made sense that it would interfere with the flow of life force in the body by affecting the neural canal or affecting the IVF and the nerve root. Now, with the evolution of understanding and science, that model has evolved, and there has been a model of strictly pretty much spinal cord tension due to meningeal involvement. There has been now an evolving model that when we adjust and put a force into the system, it actually affects directly the neurology of the brain. And to me, that is a no-brainer, no pun intended, because everything is connected. You know, BGSA, when you step on a dog's tail, at what end does it bark? The body is all interconnected. So when you affect one area of the body, you can affect the entire system. And in system theory, especially in open system, we know that you can enter the system at any place and affect the entire system. So I believe that at this point, we still have evolving theories around subluxation. Now, some people say, well, we don't have a quote, firm, scientific, provable, demonstrable theories. I get it. Doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Clinically, over 125 years of a profession, we know that when we put an input into the system, into the neurospinal system, something beneficial, unless it's, you know, completely disconnected input and brutal, something beneficial manifests in the physiology of people. In network spinal analysis, as you well know, you can see that a transformation takes place as you input the system, even though those are more subtle and light input, to clear the neurospinal system. So it's very clear to me that at this point, and this is my own delusion, okay, nobody has to agree with me, that we do not really know what subluxations are. It does not mean they don't exist. We don't know what electricity is, we use it every day. We don't know what atoms is, we use it in physics every day. So we have evolving models. And I think it's very important to be open-minded, to be inquisitive, to allow those people that have that kind of mindset to keep moving forward in what is the new model that we can evolve? What is the new theory that we can bring forth? Is it more accurate from the stepping stone that we had behind us before?
You know, it's very interesting. I have a practice member right now who is a quantum physicist. So I'm learning things from him. And he was talking to me. What he's so enthralled about is this wave in network. And I don't want to diverge the concept talk to network, but he says he's very interested in this wave concept that we see in this work and that experience and that I see on the people that you're taking care of. He said, because I study the atom, I said, well, what do you do with atoms? So we manipulate them and have them move through space and time. He said to me, just basically, atoms are all energy. And he said, our bodies, our structures are made to make waves. So that's what he said to me. And I said, oh, that's very interesting. You're in the right place. But he said, I study atoms all day. It's all energy, you know,
right.
and our bodies are all waves.
And as you know, with atoms, depending on how we look at them, they manifest the very ways that we look at them. If we look at right. them as a particle, they manifest as a particle. If we look at them as a wave, they manifest as a wave.
Right.
So the connection between the observer and the observed is critical.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So now, another thing, most likely there'll be a lot of students that listen to this, and most of a lot of students that will also be at Mile High, and I have a big calling to students because I know they're the future of chiropractic. And the future of chiropractic and humanity through chiropractic is vital theme for me. With that, and I know it is for you as well. With that, I think chiropractic students are sadly taught or learned somewhere, maybe directly taught this, that, oh, adjusting people is not enough, subluxation is not enough. You have to do more than that. To people aren't going to come in just to get adjusted.
Yeah, you want me to speak to that?
Yes.
Oh my God. So first, that concept that adjusting is not enough, it would be no different than a dentist that has a specific scope of practice saying, you know, dentistry is not enough. I think I'm going to give you a massage, or I'm going to put you on a heating pad, or I'm going to give you other stuff, what do we call adjunct, which I don't want to offend anyone, but adjunct, when you break it down, means to add junk. So chiropractic is defined as a very specific field of expertise. We know what we do and we know what we don't do. The moment that someone believes that the role of a chiropractor is to treat symptoms, to treat intestinal disease, they're off into the allopathic model of life, and now they are competing in what I call the red ocean. The red ocean is where the sharks are, where everybody is competing for the same piece of meat. Basically, the moment that they step into the therapeutic model of life and into the allopathic model, they compete with all of the other therapies out there, and there is hundreds of them, for a small sliver of clientele, which are people with symptom sickness and disease. But if you stay into your field of clearing subluxation and sharing in a non-dogmatic, non-fanatical way the laws of life, the laws that guide human health, the laws that guide healing, once you stay in that field of clearing the neurospinal system because it is a positive for human physiology, you are now in the blue ocean. The blue ocean is where you are the only expert out there and you're not competing with anyone. That is a big difference in staying very focused on what is the objective of an adjustment and what is the scope of practice of chiropractic. But in school, they are being taught this whole array that as a chiropractor, you should be Walmart to the world. You know, you can sell mattresses, you can sell inserts, you can sell shoes, you can sell organic cotton t-shirt, water filter, air filter, you know, laundry ball, you name it. I mean, I make a caricature of it, but we are supposed to be, you know, the jack of all trades, the master of none to people. Oh yeah, we'll do some homeopathy, we'll do some osteopathy, we'll do some physical therapy, we'll do some acupuncture, we'll do some nutrition, we'll do all those things. And I've heard some chiropractors that are well known, even in the so-called pure part of our profession, saying, well, you know, I give nutrition to people because I use it for myself. Well, yeah. I mean, there is a lot of things that I use for myself. It doesn't mean it's part of my scope of practice. I use good nutrition. It's common sense. But I'm not a nutritionist. I use massage. I get massage on a regular basis. I'm not a massage therapist. You know, I've used acupuncture at times, but I'm not an acupuncturist. So it's not because I use something for my own well-being and health that I should be doing this in my own practice for other people, because that's not my skill of expertise. That's not my field of expertise. So to the student, I would say, be clear as to what is your field of expertise, and be clear that going through the present curriculum in nearly all the schools, even the schools that are so-called more pure in chiropractic, will not necessarily make you a chiropractor. you better start to develop for yourself, to grow for yourself a parallel curriculum while going through school.
Yes. And I think a simple experience in my own life and practice is the more time and energy I put towards something other than chiropractic in practice, the less time and energy there is for chiropractic. And the more time and energy I put towards chiropractic and focus, the less time and energy I have for other things.
It's very simple. I mean, if you were a basketball player, do you spend time playing ping pong, tennis, golf, football, soccer? Or do you, if you're a professional, or do you spend nearly all of your time, you know, on basketball? You know, right. And even if you meditate or you do yoga, you are doing it because to improve your game in basketball. So it's a clear thing. You focus on one thing and you do it well. You become the expert in that field and you create that amazing attraction for that simple service. The chiropractic adjustment in clearing the neurospinal system is enough in and of itself, end of the story. Now, it's not enough in and of itself if you are treating symptoms. No, it may not be enough. It may be enough for some people, but because chiropractic is not a treatment for symptoms, then other symptoms are still there. But we are not in the business of treating symptoms. We're not in the business of treating sickness and disease. That's not our business. So when one is clear about that, you can stay very connected. You know, one of the analogy, Danny, that I use a lot is, if I go to a dentist and I say, "Doc, you know, my wrist and my elbow hurt terribly." He goes, "I understand, it must feel bad. Can you lean back in that chair so I can check your mouth?" If I go in and I said, "Doc, you know, I have hemorrhoids." He doesn't go, "Well, drop your pants, let me look at your ass." He go, "Let me check your teeth and do dental cleaning. And if there is a cavity, you know, we'll do something about it." It has a specific scope of practice. It's no different with a chiropractor. Yeah. I have not ever in 40 years of practice lost a person that complained persistently about a symptom and say, "You know, maybe I should refer you to an osteopath or to a physical therapist or to an orthopedist. I'll see you next week."
Right.
I've never lost a person. I don't treat symptoms. So we don't treat symptoms in chiropractic. When we are clear with that, that's the end of the story. So it makes it very, very wonderful to be clear.
Yeah, and there's freedom in that. There's freedom in that, and truly. So before we wrap up, I highly recommend people plug into MLS training. I took MLS trainings as a student. I look forward to taking them again. There's different levels of mastery. And as you grow, I know I see it from a different perspective now. And so how do people plug into MLS?
Well, it's very easy. The MLS seminars with an S, .com website has all of the locations and the dates and times of the seminar. Usually we go from season to season. So the spring, early summer season, and then summer, early fall and winter season. So right now, all the spring and summer available. That's simple as that. Make a commitment. And you know, I want to emphasize that that approach is not a technique. It's an approach. As you know, people that do osseous adjustment in network spinal analysis can benefit from MLS because it's an approach to adjusting that's very honoring to the system. That takes the neurospinal system and the meningeal system into consideration, that brings the body into ease always rather than tension. So it can be applied with people that do upper cervical, that do knee chest, that do full spine, that do Gonstead. It doesn't matter. They can highly benefit from that training. And on top of it, they're going to get inspired greatly to engage on a path of mastery.
Yes, yes, I agree. So thank you again. Thank you again for just sharing your wisdom with so many chiropractors and chiropractic students and the public for years. And also for joining us at Mile High this year. We look forward to seeing everybody August 20th to 23rd, Mile High 2020 Vision, where refining our vision will help you refine your vision. It's our eighth round of Mile High. So we look forward to seeing all of you there. Nice. And if you're enjoying this podcast, most certainly hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our weekly Mile High podcast episodes. And Arno, thank you so much for all you do for chiropractic.
You're very welcome. Danny, those podcasts, people can listen to it without the video, right? They can be driving their car.
Yes, video and audio. Yep.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing then. Yeah.
Yeah. So they can listen to it on an iPod, and there's a video also if they want that as well.
Sweet. Sweet. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you for having me, Danny. Really appreciate it.
Thank you all. And thank you. Keep changing spines and lives and minds with chiropractic, everyone.
Yep.